Hey there, it's me, Keith Malley. How you doing? How's it going over there? Hello? Oh, this is going to be tough. Anyway, I'm over here now because what? Because she said, please. Dutch clutch all day long. We're continuing the audio version of The Great American Novel, the first book I ever wrote. It was put out in 2010. We're on chapter two. This is called Fairly Higher Education and the Workforce. I'm hoping hearing the audio also makes you horny to get the brand new book, The Dad Emails. Both books you can get now on Amazon, keithandthegirl.com/dadbook. keithandthegirl.com/dadbook. And people seem to be digging the retelling of The Great American Novel. The Great American Novel, says Jeffrey, if I may brag, is the best nonfiction comedy I've read. It's a voyeuristic look inside the life of an everyday guy coming of age. The comedic style is similar to the kind of thing you would hear on NPR's This American Life. And it has the brilliant wit of a Sidaris essay and the raunchy edge of Andrew Dice Clay. Forget about it! It is full of candid tales, the life of Malley growing up in a small town with his conservative family. You won't put it down till you finish it. Highly recommended. Thank you, Jeffrey. If you're a fan of Keith and the Girl's show, is this review, then this book will add much needed and appreciated backstory to Keith's life. You'll laugh out loud, guaranteed. 5 stars. That's sweet to hear. Thank you. Yes, if you ever wonder how Keith became Keith, this is how. Albie. Once I started the book, I couldn't put it down until I finished it. Alternatively hilarious and moving, but mainly hilarious. The Great American Novel really captures Keith Malley's comedic voice and challenging upbringing. If you are a fan of comedy, do yourself a favor and get this book. All right, I was a little nervous. You know, you do something, you get nervous, how are people going to take it? But that's sweet. So, both The Great American Novel and, of course, the new book, The Dad Emails, where I catfished my dad for a year. He was thinking he was hitting on my ex-wife. It, of course, was really me. Both books available, keithandthegirl.com/dadbook. All right? Thank you very much. Here we go. Chapter 2 of The Great American Novel.
Chapter 2. Fairly Higher Education and the Workforce. Like my brothers Mark and Ken, I considered being a Catholic priest. I think that just goes to show you that when kids are young, they simply want to be what they're around the most. But I was an altar boy, and that was as close to God as I ever got. I was Jesus Christ's bus boy. I planned on being a bus driver also, then a teacher. In English class in senior high, I got a C on a speech simply because it was too long. People talked about the government and if there was indeed a separation between church and state, and these topics only took 5 minutes. My Kool-Aid speech lasted 42 minutes. Too long? Maybe too thorough? It was injustices like these that made me want to be a teacher. I even thought about being a gym teacher who plays tackle football every single day. Maybe someday we throw in something for variety, like boxing with no gear, or baseball where you're allowed to whip the ball directly at your opponent as he runs from base to base. Hell, hit him when he's on base. What the hell do I care? Growing up, my friends and I got together and played football in the local open field. Even as an adult, I'd make football dates with my coworkers. However, growing up, I didn't know the rules to football, and when the quarterback would throw to his receiver, I'd pummel the receiver and then catch the ball. Touchdown! The losing receiver would chase me. Then when he couldn't catch me, he'd cry, "You can't do that." And I'm like, "What? What don't I get? The ball was thrown. We want possession of it. What? I really didn't know. Are we men or what? Pussies." It's true. I really thought you were allowed to throw the baseball directly at the opponent as he tried to slide home. Thwack! Anyway, in my gym class, if we did have either boxing or baseball, I'd have to change the rules even more. For example, I would make the baseball field more rectangular, and you want to hold onto the ball, which is of a longer shape, more like a hot dog than a ball. The goal is to run with this ball to the other side of the field, and opponents would try to tackle you as you ran. For boxing, there would be no ropes and no gloves, but padding to take its place. The ring would be extended lengthwise. One player is given a ball of some sort. His job is to run from one end to the other. His opponent must stop him. No punching is allowed, but tackling is. For more excitement, each player gets 10 or so guys on his team. Yes, it's true. For a period of time, I wanted to be a teacher. But in all fairness, I also just as seriously wanted to be a private investigator and a mob man. I also wanted to be a bounty hunter and a crime dog. Somewhere along the line, I decided being a teacher would be too frustrating. Maybe I realized I could have students like me, the way your parents pray you have kids who are just like you. I even got my home ec teacher frustrated. We'd make pudding, I'd sneak in instant. I'd burn water, and all of a sudden I could make perfect lasagna. I was terrible in school. Whether it was stealing tests from teachers' desks or being sent to detention for saying an outburst like poop within our stricter-than-strict walls, the teachers all knew my name. Things never really got any better for me as I grew up. I was even getting D's in a class called Fascinating Foods. While my older brother Mike got over 1,400 on his SATs, I got 850. And I just found out you get 750 for spelling your name right. To make my parents think I was good at something, I did a lot of extracurricular activities. In high school, I was just about to take my brown belt in a style called Ishinru when I quit. I didn't put much faith in the belt symbolism. To prove my point, I ran into a 12-year-old triple black belt the other day, and I beat the shit out of him. For a couple of years, I was in forensics, that's drama forensics, not weapons forensics. I wish you were there to see all the people from other schools get pissed off when their Shakespearean sonnets and Walt Whitman poems always lost in my reading of Garfield's Babes and Bullets. I got into all the art stuff. Kind of. I was in 12th grade after school one day, and a large portion of the class was going through auditions for that year's senior play, The Sting. Everyone who wanted the audition was given books far ahead of time to prepare, but I never read it. I never saw the movie. I just knew I wanted to be in a play, and whatever the longest, coolest part of the play was, that's the part I wanted. After we all read the same parts from the playbook, we were told to write on an index card with our name the part we wanted. All I knew was that it was either Paul Newman's role or Robert Redford's role that was the biggest. So I took a guess and I wrote that Robert Redford was the character I wanted to play. As we were about to turn our requests in, I noticed this other kid, Jeremy, a smart, arrogant young man who thinks he's the most creative person ever created, had Paul Newman's character written down. So I figured that was the biggest part. Being the prick that I am, I erase Redford's name and I write Paul Newman. I got the part. But even during the actual performance, I never really knew what the play was about. I only knew my lines. I was too busy backstage hitting on girls and trying to mess up everyone else's lines. It wasn't until much later did I see the real movie, and I hoped our nickel and dime production was even remotely as cool as that masterpiece. More importantly, I hoped I was remotely as cool as Paul Newman. Another important event for me in high school, right next to governmental economics, of course, was Somerset's annual Mr. Irresistible contest. During the senior year on Valentine's Day, 10 or so jocks got on stage all dressed up and stripped to boxer shorts while answering tough, important questions like, who has it tougher, men or women? At the last minute, someone couldn't show up. Knowing my weakness, a cheerleader was sent to convince me to take this person's place. Reminding me it would get me out of history class, I quickly agreed. I then snuck out of school and bought a pair of sexy striped boxer shorts, and I was ready to go. Soon everyone's ready to appear on stage in their suit and tie except me, the only one unprepared. I'd have to pull off a miracle. So when asked why I should be this year's Mr. Irresistible, I remembered almost everyone knew my relationship with my father because he came into the school almost daily to check on his children's progress. Well, as you know, I answered, my father was a Mr. Irresistible and his father and his grandfather. So if I'm not this year's Mr. Irresistible, well, I'll pretty much be taken to the shed for disgracing the family name. Please don't make me face my father empty-handed. During the boxer shorts competition, I was asked if I had any bad habits. Luckily, we weren't thrown any real questions. They knew we were idiots. How about a question like, what war was most significant, World War I, II, or Vietnam? What would I say? They're all good? But it seemed like a simple question. Do I have any bad habits? And I took the microphone as I pretended to think. Any bad habits? I really don't think so. I slowly moved the mic back and forth below my waist as though I were jerking off. No, I'm pretty sure I have no bad habits, and more juvenile jerking off. The students were dying. I even had a few teachers crack a smile in my holier-than-thou high school, but I still knew better than to look at my principal. After lunch for 2 weeks, you'd pass jars labeled with the 10 contestants' names on them. As you passed, you would vote for who you liked by putting spare change in the jar of who you wanted to win. In exchange for your money, you're put in a drawing to see if you can win a date with who you voted for. It turns out I made history by winning and making the school a few hundred dollars. Even the principal called me Mr. Irresistible. At the end of the contest, I'm called on stage as the winner and asked to pick my date from a hat. Before I did, though, I had to sincerely thank my audience. I led everyone into the Pledge of Allegiance, the most appropriate way I knew to celebrate, and then I spoke. From the bottom of my heart, I would like to thank all the guys who never let me down and all the girls who always kept me up. Thank you. As we all know, it only takes one person to ruin it for generations. Despite a class record, Somerset no longer holds the Mr. Irresistible contest. My class rank was 118 out of 201. It wasn't something you wrote home about. But I remember the guy who was number 201. He wasn't the school retard. He was a regular guy. Stuart Fogelsong. And we asked him, how can you even be number 201? Not only did I not understand how he graduated, but I didn't understand how he even knew how to breathe. When asked about being dead last in class, he replied, someone has to be dead last. And it made so much sense, but then I thought, just by knowing that, shouldn't that raise you up a few points? With such an incredible background and rich academic history, you'll have to agree with me when I tell you how amazing it is that major companies haven't been fighting over me to recruit me into their firms. Perhaps this explains why, when I was kicked out of the house after graduation, I had to take whatever I can get. My dad kicked Mike and me out of the house on the year I graduated. July 4th, to be exact, and I had to laugh. Independence Day. Why, yes, I believe that is indeed correct, he replies, as if it was just a coincidence and he just realized it now. But oh, how fitting. I moved out immediately after graduation. Son, I believe you are leaving early, not because you wish to live on your own, but because you wish to spit me. To spit on you? To spite me, boy. You know that's what I said. Go paint the car. Okay, bye. Yes, boy. Bye indeed. As long as he has the last word, the man is happy. Mike and I got an apartment in town. We were in the same city, but a nice distance away, and it was great. Years earlier, as a treat once a month, we'd all go to McDonald's as a family. Everyone would get a hamburger, we'd all share a container of large fries, and we'd each get our own water. Now that I was my own man, I went out of my way to have McDonald's every day. Plus, I was hoping I'd get groped again. Just give me another chance, Lord. My first job ever was as a dishwasher. My brother worked at the restaurant where my dad assured us was jam-packed with Hollywood stars back in the day. One day, the dishwashing machine broke, so Mike told them he could bring in his little brother to help in doing them by hand. He knew I was eager to get out of the house. I was more than happy to work. All the restaurants are the same in Somerset, and once you have one place under your belt, it's understood you're good for all of them. After graduation, I'm working as a cook at a King's restaurant, and Mike's working as a waiter at a ski resort. This was freedom. Sure, we were living check to check, but we were free. Dad wouldn't let Mike get his driver's license until he was 21 years old. I couldn't go and get mine until I left the house. Now we were able to do whatever we want, and no one would be snooping through our things. My parents looked through everything we had in the house. Mike would come home from college, and Mom, especially Mom, would be digging through his bags as soon as he wasn't around. Nothing was sacred, and it was our fault to think we could hide anything, let alone pornography. One day we came home from church, and my dad tells me to get back in the car. Where are we going? To the shores of Tripoli. Now get in the car. There, of course, was no talking in the car. There never was. We finally get to our destination, the only body of water in Somerset, appropriately called Somerset Lake. Dad parks in a secluded spot and turns to me. Take off your pants, he commands. I'm just kidding. He says calmly, now, son, this is not the shores of Tripoli, and I am not God, but I am your father, and I would like to know what is going on. Now, as you know, as a kid, you can't volunteer anything. You don't take a guess at what your parent is talking about because you might just bring up something totally different. I have no idea what you're talking about. No, he asks sarcastically. No? You don't know what I am talking about. No. You have no possible clue what I could be talking about. Then tell me, son. And he continues as he very dramatically reaches into the backseat to pull something up front. What is this? And he pulls out a paper bag. A paper bag? No! And he tries the drama one more time, this time pulling out whatever's in the bag. This! And he pulls out a folder, and I'm more confused than ever. Yeah, Dad, I really don't understand. Damn it! I mean this! and he opens the folder and pulls out all the pictures I ripped out of porno magazines. "Do you enjoy looking at this stuff? This crap? This smut?" Through osmosis, I now have a certain volume of the Encyclopedia Britannica memorized. S is the 19th letter of our alphabet. It was also a letter in the ancient Semite alphabet. The S probably came from an Egyptian hieroglyphic sign, which was the picture of a mountain with several peaks. The Semites named the letter Shin. That story also reminds me of the first concert I ever saw, Poison's Flesh and Blood Tour. My favorite band ever was in Johnstown, less than an hour away, and I wasn't going to miss it for the world. I bought tickets at a record store weeks before the concert without my parents knowing, and on that very day, March 1st, 1991, I brought it up. I made up some story about getting a free ticket because someone had to change their plans at the last minute and therefore wouldn't be able to see the religious concert held by the Byzantine Catholic rock group Poison. When asked to show the ticket, my story got even better when he saw the opening act was a band named Slaughter. I end up being allowed to go, and as I'm leaving the arena with some girl I met, I run into my father. Somehow, out of all the people there, I run right into my dad, who's asking everyone what exactly is Poison's religious background. He said everyone said they were pagan. It was always like that at home. I had to say I was working in order to go on a date, which I kept doing even though Dad would always call work to see if I was there. One time I went with this girl to see a school play, The Sound of Music. When I got home, I got the S volume because my dad said he went to the play to see if that's where I really went, and he didn't see me. The point I'm trying to make is this: we found freedom. I only dragged that on because I liked the sound of my own voice. I was in my first apartment celebrating my brother getting me work at the local ski resort and the 75% per hour pay increase, and everyone from the old restaurant I bussed at came over. We're all having a great time. Most people are downstairs drinking, and because at the time I wasn't a full-fledged alcoholic, I was upstairs hitting on a girl in our newly styled attic. This kid from work runs upstairs and tells me that Carl, this huge fat ass from work that found out about the party and invited himself, is spilling my expensive liquor on my kitchen floor. So I run downstairs and go into the kitchen, and there's Carl holding this bottle of vodka upside down in the air high above his head, trying to catch the hard liquor in his mouth. I grab the vodka from him and start to put it away, and immediately I hear him yelling out the kitchen window, stomping his massive feet. I'm 18 years old at the time. Almost everyone there is underage, and I'm getting this bad vibe. I calm a placid Carl down and have everyone leave. Fat ass is too big to move. He falls on the floor. No exaggeration here. Within 10 seconds of all the cars leaving, there's a knock on my door. I look in the peephole and see the police. Apparently, Carl's yelling and animal-like behavior prompted a neighbor to report my brother and me. I had to convince the police I hadn't been drinking. I didn't even drink enough to smell it on my breath, but I was worried about those breathalyzer tests, so here's my ingenious reply. As a joke, someone poured something into my Coke, but that was it. How original. I'm never worried about me getting in trouble, just getting other people in trouble. I was afraid of my brother getting in trouble for providing alcohol to minors. After rolling Carl over, we saw from his wallet he was under 21. The police open our refrigerator after I tell him people were over drinking just a little, and he notices our refrigerator is just shelf after shelf after shelf of beer. Just a little, huh? But we were more than cooperative, and we ended up with fines no more than $100 each. We just needed to get Carl to go with the ambulance when it arrived. Somehow we get Carl to the bathroom, but not quite the toilet, and he yaks all over the room. Soon the ambulance is there for the alcohol poison freak, but he just lies on the floor saying that he's not going anywhere. "Do you want to go to the hospital?" the cop asks, all irate. "Or do you want to go to jail?" Carl replies, barely audible. "I'll go to jail." "That's not the right answer," the cop bellows. At the cop's wishes, and coincidentally mine, we're told to each grab a leg of Carl's and drag him out of the apartment. Right by the door, we have a nice amount of steps because we're on the second floor. Without hesitation, Mike and I start dragging this behemoth legs first down the steps. Carl's head bounces off a few steps, and a man from the hospital tells us to keep his head from banging off the wood. "Don't worry about it," the cop decides. "Just get him the hell out." Thud, 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 thud. We couldn't quit laughing. Days later, I found out if I hadn't grabbed the vodka from him when I did, Carl would now be dead. Then again, it could have had something to do with Mike and me smacking his head off the wood an exorbitant amount of times. So maybe it was my fault for letting a man drink in my house that got drunk on a wine cooler and didn't know when to quit, but I don't look at it that way. I look at it like I saved a man's life. God bless me. So with that party, not paying rent on time, overflowing the toilet and soaking the downstairs apartment with toilet water, loud noises, blah, 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 we're asked to find a new apartment. It was right before we moved into our second apartment when I got into a memorable little fender bender. It was winter and I was on my way to work at my new ski resort job. I was going slow and everything, but my car was a piece of shit I brought from a friend of mine from high school. His name was Marcus, and we used to convince girls we were undercover cops spending time in Somerset to catch a big drug kingpin, like 21 Jump Street. Anyway, I didn't notice how icy the roads were until my front-wheel luxury car, the Cadillac DeVille, DeVille, like CeCe DeVille, slid all the way to the other side of the road, right into a thick wooden fence. My junk car uproots part of the fence, and a thick board comes crashing through the left side of my front windshield, right by my head. I didn't even see the wood go through my windshield. I hit the fence and boom, it was right there. Now I'm not thinking how this gargantuan slab of wood is less than an inch away from my head. I'm not thinking about how lucky I am to be alive. I'm thinking about how I haven't had time since I moved out of my parents' house to get my driver's license. I get out of the car and stare at the wreck like it's all a bad dream. Then I get back in the car. I start to pull out backwards, wondering if anyone will notice my big-ass rusty blue Cadillac driving back home with no windshield and pieces of glass flying about. The fence won't come out. I'm starting to drag the entire fence. I get out again, stare for a while longer, and start pulling this tree out of my windshield. I'm pulling and pulling and pulling, wondering how I'm going to get out of this one, and a man gets out of the car parked next to the building, a shop selling motorcycles, RVs, and accessories. "Are you all right?" And I'm just hoping he doesn't work there. "That was some accident," he continues. I take some pieces of glass out of my hand, and I continue bleeding on myself. "Yeah, I'm okay, thank you." "Yeah, how about we go inside and get your registration and insurance?" Not only does he work there, he's the owner. And as for insurance, well, that's hard to get without a license. But I remembered Mike had insurance on his station wagon and his name was on my Cadillac's registration. I could pull something out of this if I ever plan on being an actor. We get in his office and I continue pulling glass out of various parts of my body. I call Mike's insurance company and explain how they need to fax my car's insurance to this guy's business as I hear in the background, "You better quit bleeding on my desk." So the fax starts coming through and the owner lets me go, knowing this will be taken care of. I could then leave to figure out a much smarter plan. I quickly put my bloody shoes back on, not even caring if there was still glass in my feet, and I almost leap out of the office. As soon as I touch the outside door, "Whoa, not so damn fast!" Weeks later, we agree I can do work to pay off the damages. By this time, I'm working in a Mexican restaurant, and I plan on spending 2 hours a day cleaning RVs and doing other shitty manual labor before work starts until I've done about $1,300 worth of work at minimum wage. I pay $300 to get the windshield fixed, almost as much as I paid for the damn car, and I'm ready for his work. Going on my third day of work for him, now with a valid driver's license, I'm pulled over by a cop who says my car isn't inspected. I knew he was wrong. I knew I had a good couple of months left. When I get out of the car, I see the inspection sticker is 4 years old. I know that's incorrect. On my way home with a new ticket, I get pulled over again by another cop. After seeing I just got a ticket for the sticker, he lets that go and instead gives a ticket for a dragging muffler. With no money to get the car fixed and inspected, I walked to the Mexican restaurant when I had to work. Running low on all my funds months later because I was paying $100 a month to the man with the damaged fence, I cleaned out the car to try to swindle someone else. I cleaned out the ashtray, which I figured wouldn't be so bad because I don't ever smoke, and there was my old inspection sticker. When those idiots replaced my windshield, they left on an old expired sticker and put my good one in the ashtray. By the time I found the sticker was expired. I've worked almost every fucked up job there is. I went to training seminars to sell the $1,000 Kirby vacuum cleaners door to door. I headed a small bakery in a ski resort. I telemarketed for AT&T Wireless. I've been a receptionist. I worked for a company that specializes in trademarks. I was the assistant to a greeting card maker. I played music and videos for a hip Mexican restaurant chain. I worked for a child casting agency. I sold that imposter cologne on the street. I've been a dishwasher, a busboy, a waiter, a cashier. It's weird I was trusted with all that money, though, because even as a young adult, I got confused with it. There's 60 seconds in a minute. 60 is the magic number, but there's 100 cents in a dollar. 100 is the number to remember, and I'd always get them confused. 58, 59, $1. If a movie is 95 minutes long, I'm like, wow, it wasn't even an hour. But Keith, you should understand the concept of money for your job simply because you've dealt with money most of your life. Learn it from where? Cashiers? You ever go to these grocery and department stores? Convenience stores are the same. They're giving you back your change. And 10 is 6 and 9 is 2. Have a good day. Wait, what the hell just happened? As for time, I tried to figure out how much time was on each side of a 100-minute audio tape. And I needed a pen, paper, a calculator, special software for my computer. The worst job I ever had was when I was a nurse's aide. The first week was great, about 8 hours each day at $6 or $7 an hour. We'd watch films on hepatitis B and how not to treat the residents. In a film, they had some old lady yell at a nurse, and then the nurse smacked the old lady across the mouth, shoved her in a small closet, and locked the door. Then we had to say what the nurse did wrong. Good work, our instructor told us. Usually every class misses a few. The first day I was there, I met some lady in a walker trying to find the elevator. Thinking I'd score some points being helpful, I led her to the elevator and pressed the bottom floor like she requested, figuring she must have been meeting family. It wasn't until later, during my interview in fact, that I heard nurses frantically looking for Mrs. Blanchard, again a name I'm simply guessing at, until they finally found her wandering aimlessly outside, five streets down. Soon training was over and it was time to get your hands dirty. Literally. We had to wipe their asses. Now, it doesn't matter how much of a real man you think you are. Once you wipe an 80-year-old's ass, it all goes out the window. We also had to dress them, bathe them, feed them, powder them. Oh, God, the powdering. I was the only guy in the whole facility. Now, usually that's a good thing, but not when you're in a nursing home. It was standard practice to powder under the old lady's breasts, so I figured if I could wipe them after their toilet ordeals, surely I could lift a breast and powder one or two. But the ladies and their damn buzzers, they'd buzz me every time I'd walk past their room, and they're shouting, "Powder my breasts! Nurse, powder my breasts!" They were getting some sick thrill from it. "Powder my breasts! You have to!" I decided when I'm in a nursing home, I'm going to buzz my room every time the female nurses walk by. "Nurse, powder my penis. Nurse, it's your job." We were supposed to take them to the bathroom after every meal. The first day I was in charge of residence, I asked the lady if she needed to use the bathroom. And she said she was sure she didn't. And I figured, well, she would know. A nurse calls me into this lady's room less than 5 minutes later. "Keith, did you take Margie to the bathroom?" "Oh yeah, you're supposed to after every meal, right?" "Right." And the nurse then turns Margie around in her wheelchair, and her right leg is just covered with urine. You can see it through her pants. The nurse then takes off Margie's right shoe, and in the shoe is a big puddle of piss. We had to bathe one of the residents every day, and my first real day finds me assigned this behemoth to bathe. I take her around the facility in her wheelchair, and she doesn't say a word as I gather towels, soap, and everything else. I take her into the bathroom and she sees our tub, the same one she sees every time someone bathes her. Immediately, she's in hysterics. "Don't give me a bath! I don't want a bath!" The bath is massive to fit all the residents. I don't mean all at one time. There's this mechanical seat on the outside of the tub, and after you put the bather in the seat will lift up and over and back down, this time in the tub. But the lady's insane. She's flailing her arms and screaming. And this must be normal because no one's coming to my aid. And again, I figure, if the lady doesn't want a bath, who am I to force her to take one? I mean, it's not like she was just out playing football or anything. So I tell her I won't bathe her. But if anyone asks if she was bathed, she must say yes. And she agrees. And then I start filling up the tub, explaining I have to get the sides wet so it looks like we used it. And again, she's in hysterics. "Don't give me a bath! Oh my God, this place ain't fit for dogs! Don't give me a bath! Ah!" And she won't quit doing this no matter how I remind her that I am not going to bathe her. "Don't get me wet! You better not get me wet! I mean it!" I took a handful of the water as it came from the faucet and I threw it in her face. "Would you shut up, lady? Can't you listen?" So now the tub's wet. She's wet. Only one last thing to do. When you put a resident in the chair tells you the person's weight, which you had to record. Well, this dame was in no shape to be put in the chair for even a second, so I looked her up and down and I guessed at her weight. At the end of the day, the head nurse talked about my report. Keith, did you weigh that crying bitch? I forgot her name and used creative license. Raiders could do that. Yeah, isn't it there? Yeah, but it's off. Way off. What should it be? Hey, can't blame a guy for trying. Why don't you weigh her again? So I dragged her in the room and quickly threw her on the chair, and my guess was about 50 pounds off. Ooh, must have been a problem with the machine. It was that first day when I was leaving work, the ladies' buzzers are going mad, and everyone's yelling at me to powder their breasts when I knew this was my last day, never mind the great things I had planned on buying with a $7 an hour job. I was passing the last room, which belonged to some lady who thought she was just there to visit every single day. Nurse, I want to go home. Join the fucking club. And I was gone. Conversely, the best job I ever had lasted about the same time period. I was a disc jockey back home in a town outside of Somerset. It was fantastic while it lasted. I sent the radio station a cassette tape of me interviewing my brother Mark with Kiss music in the background. Later, the owner asked how I blended music with my voice like I was some incredible genius. Anyway, I'm talking to Mark on the tape about immature things, like how he'd piss in the school radiator and cause big school board meetings on why a certain hallway reeked every day. I guess it never dawned on Mark he'd have to walk down that hall every day, too. I was just my charming self, kissed her ass, and said how cool it was that they're so different and so novel from all the other radio stations. Oh, a 24-hour request line? Genius! Then I mentioned I wanted to work there, and if I didn't single-handedly improve their ratings, I'd leave without pay. I was ready to take that risk. Pennsylvania unemployment was paying pretty well. 2 days later, they called me in and sat me down at their massive console, left me by myself, and the magic began. Like all places, they had rules, though. The station that dares to be different. They wouldn't let me play the hottest song at the time, Aerosmith's Eat the Rich, because it had the word ass in it. You couldn't say ass? My God, even my dad says the word ass. It's in the Bible, you know. Knowing the boss's radio didn't work in his truck, I played what I wanted when I knew he was on his way home. I played Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, Smashing Pumpkins, a little Poison, of course, and, oh yeah, Aerosmith. All songs Billy Badass wouldn't let us play, and the station was praised with calls. I wasn't taught how to tape calls, though, so I put them right on the air with a hand ready next to the bleep button, and I never wanted it to end. I had found my calling. I was the only DJ who used his real name, which was perfectly understandable. I was the only one proud of what I was doing. The owner decided to be a DJ and hire other DJs, as lame and unoriginal as he was. So sure, I was bringing the station out of obscurity in just a few days, but it wasn't like I had to be this incredible thing to be better than anyone else, like the Chicken Man or the Commander. Leaving the station one night, I jokingly said to my boss, "See you later, Chief, on my way out." And he quickly and sternly corrected me. "It's Commander, the Commander." Without exaggeration, in 1 week, I had quadrupled their number of listeners. I wasn't trying to be Howard Stern. I was just trying to find something to start some kind of career in one of the few things I could do. Finally, I found an outlet. Now, it's only the second week of work, and the other DJs are flooded with calls saying they want to hear me, and the boss's wife loses her factory job and tells her husband she wants to fill in for me. Apparently, she believes it's the time slot that's magical. She tells the boss to comply or she'll leave him, and soon we have a new DJ called the Mystery Lady. Without any warning, I'm out looking for a new job. What makes me feel better about the whole deal is that within months, the station goes to Easy Listening, vying for new sponsors and listeners to save the station. A few months later, the station is out of business. Good. Fuck you. My favorite music was glam. Back in the day when a guitar riff meant something, there was glam rock. Bon Jovi, Rat, Firehouse, Def Leppard, Extreme, Mother Love Bone, Jackal, Skid Row, Damn Yankees, Van Halen, Twisted Sister, Scorpions, Motley Crue. Some of these great bands are still pledging their allegiance to the rock, while, sadly, many have fallen. You guys should see the engineer, by the way, shaking his head in disgust. He's disgusted with my music choices. Glam rock. Rock with no apologies. Women wore lingerie and makeup to concerts. They looked good. They didn't put on flannel shirts and I'm ugly signs. They were dressing to help celebrate. And you could say how childish and simple glam rock sounded until you listened to that guitar solo. Every song had a guitar segment that was amazing. Nowadays, we all think that being a drummer would have to be the easiest job in the band. But take a look sometime at a glam band drummer drumming. You can't deny they're rocking it. And I don't care how long these new songs stay at number one. Deep down, we both know more people got laid to glam rock than any other kind of music. God bless you, Janie Lane. As good as the song Smack My Bitch Up is, I'm not going to use it as an aphrodisiac anytime soon. And as much as I like Marilyn Manson, the woman that gets turned on listening to the sound of his voice, well, that's just one woman I really don't need to meet. Although we are all stars in the dope show, that's still very true. I love when you're at a concert and halfway through the show, the performer yells out, "Now I want you guys to rock!" And I'm like, okay, but I kind of thought we were. They yell out that we need to start rocking, and to be quite honest, I thought we were doing a pretty good job. Like, really, what do you want us to do? We were all following along, and then you lost us. We'll rock with you. We'll help you build up a sweat. I just really don't understand what you need us to do. We'll stand up. We can jump around a bit. We're great at yelling, but when it comes right down to it, there's really only so much we got to work with out here. Like maybe if you gave us an instrument or something. Give me a guitar or those cymbals no one's using. I mean, Christ, we're doing more than that guy shaking those shaker things. Like that really gives your music a much needed sound. If that guy is getting a percentage of the ticket sales, you better send some money my way. I guarantee I'm rocking harder than that guy. Look at me. I'm jumping around for the love of God. I'm definitely sweating more than he is. Speaking of whores, you would think that the craziest job I ever had was the nurse's aide job. It was the worst, but not the craziest. It was one midwinter morning when I jerked off to Hustlers Barely Legal and then headed off to my new job, Feminists Against Pornography, that I experienced the craziest job I ever had. $15 an hour? I'd yell on the street corner naked for $15 an hour. Of course, I guess that would defeat the purpose. Paige, my new boss, could tell over the phone I was getting over a cold, but I assured her being outside all day in the windy blizzard tundra wouldn't affect me. Well, actually, being outside has nothing to do with getting a cold. It doesn't? I asked dumbfounded. No, you see, she continues, I'm also a scientist. And then instead of getting excited, my new boss was a genius. I got nervous. She was a nutcase. Keith, you want to go to the moon with me today? What are you talking about? Well, you see, I'm also an astronaut. Manhattan, midday. Look at the blinded bimbos. Here comes the bimbo parade. And it was immediately clear Miss Feminism is a nut job. You're all intoxicated by your own passivity. Your silence rapes me. Along with Lisa, another new person like me, I stood with Paige behind this long table as we held the cover of a 1978 Hustler magazine with the now infamous Woman in Meat Grinder cover and a blown up picture of a woman tied up and blindfolded with a small hook going through her right nipple. See what men are masturbating to, she would rant. We're told to yell, fight back, and sign the petition, while Paige continues getting a little more creative. Do you think maybe, possibly, we should be stopping this? Do you think so? And she was condescending to everyone for all 6 hours I was there. No, I don't think so either. Oh, she was on a roll. That's right, you. It's okay, your husband will beat you and rape you tonight, then call us. Oh, that's right, let him rape you and maim you and rape you. One person later said that, while they don't have money to give, they think it's a great thing we were doing. Swear to God, Paige replied, your words don't help, and your smile only rapes me. Paige wants your money. You can only help the cause when you get $5 to sign a petition for a bill in Congress. She later tells you does no good, only to inform you that for $15, you can become a member. When people don't have $15 more, well, you can join on a $15 level. That's only 10 bucks more. Well, that's right. Don't be a member. Let them rape you. Yes, you're all good little victims. A police car pulls up late in the day, and my new friend Lisa asks Paige if what we're doing is legal. Let me tell you something, Paige begins. I was out here a long time ago with some people, and we made a lot of commotion. The police came and told us that if we were here tomorrow, we'd be put in jail. So the next day, we set up in the same place, and we do the same thing. The police's jaws drop and their eyes bulge. They can't believe us. They put us in jail for 3 days. Now, of course, Lisa, a single mother of two kids, loved hearing that. And Paige continues, then, after 3 days, they let us out. And you know what we did? We set up in the same place and did the same thing. Now, I don't know if she expected me to give her a high five and think, well, thank God my boss doesn't take any shit. All I was thinking was about going to jail and being raped. And I don't mean by silence. Do you have any literature on your cause?
This isn't a library, Paige would bellow back at anyone looking for information.
What's this bill in Congress about?
The same thing it's always been about. Come back when you're willing to give money and help fight.
When a guy flipped Paige off for yelling at him, she came back with the intellectual response,
Dykes against dicks!
And there I am, hiding behind whatever pornographic poster I was holding, thinking about the $15 an hour. Fight back. Fight back to this. She yelled at one guy for trying to take a picture of us, threatening to use her extensive knowledge of the martial arts on him. All right, so my boss apparently wears many hats. Activist, scientist, astronaut, karate guru. This one lady got bitched out even after giving Paige some money for starting a sentence with,
so do you guys for the second time. For the second time! We are not guys! Come back when you realize that!
You know, this sweet old lady told us when Paige went to the bathroom, you'd all do better if you weren't with your partner. She's nuts. In fact, we always made more money when Paige abruptly left us alone with no explanation from time to time. But as quickly as she left, she always returned.
That's right. Let your husband beat you.
And I didn't want to be there. She continues fuming as this perfect family picture walks by.
Then watch as he rapes your daughter.
Someone asked if they could send the company a check.
Oh, I see. And when your genitals get burned off tonight, will you put a quarter in the phone booth to call for help? Oh, no, because that's cash. You could always rate AT&T a check for a quarter, asshole.
Keith, you know why she says that, don't you? It's her guilt. I suppose we all have our own way of doing things that differ from each other just a little. Where I was raking in dough with pornography bad, clothing good, her insightful strategy was,
your passiveness is my rape. Thank you for raping me. Give me your money.
In the future, when I work with real producers or corporate companies, I know I'm going to be called a sellout, but take a look. I sold out a long time ago. That first day was my last day. She called me at home that night saying that though Lisa doesn't have what it takes, I do. Apparently, I could be molded into a fantastic feminist for feminists against pornography. All I would have to do was show up again for work the next day. The pay rate depends on how much money the company, consisting of only us, brings in. I never received any pay for my first day. Recently, I ran into Paige and her table of pictures yelling into the crowd near New York University. She changed her issues from feminism to tackling animal cruelty. The usual fees still apply. Does it get any crazier than that? Maybe. I was a foot model once. I'll admit it. I got into it. I flexed those feet. I got into reading a book or lifting weights as I showed off those beautiful tootsies. It was like I was a supermodel on the runway. The photographer was done taking pictures and I was confused. What are you doing? There's a lot left in me. You better go get a couple rolls of film. Have you seen these feet? Were you paying attention to what I was doing? Do you understand what these things are capable of? He later said he wanted to use my body and feet in gay magazines. The money wasn't good enough, so I was gone. Now, I have nothing against gays. I just didn't want it to be assumed I was one. For example, I have nothing against black people, but I don't want to be in a picture dressed in blackface with no explanation. I make a lot of gay jokes, and that's only out of jealousy. Any man that doesn't have to deal with women crying, I cannot relate to. It's unfair, and of course people are going to talk bad about you. It's out of jealousy. There's nothing worse than a woman's tears. You would rather sleep on the couch than deal with this, wouldn't you? You can be honest. Yeah, I think we're both too tense right now.
But why?
And another wave of crying hits and all kinds of crazy thoughts run through your head. What if I just tickled her, like, real hard? You know what? My dad gave me something to cry about. That always worked with us. I know you just worked 13 hours and you haven't slept in 2 days, but I want to talk. I love you, but why now, baby? Because you're so tired and you're bound to fuck up and say something stupid. That's the game we play. You can tell when, as a man, you said everything you were thinking. Every thought you had can be said and done in 3 sentences, but the girl just keeps repeating her point and then doesn't understand why you have nothing to say.
Because I said it. I already said everything. You're the one not even listening. And then she starts crying, and she wins again.
Guys can bench press 300 pounds, but once a girl starts crying, all of a sudden somebody's a little bit stronger. I'm waiting for the day to come when my girl gets real high and she just blurts out, and you know how I cry sometimes? Oh, it's all fake. It's how I end up never wrong. And girls cry more because you don't know how to get them not to cry.
My girlfriends would know what to do. Of course they do. They're girls. The argument isn't with them. It's with me. My guy friends would know what to do too. They'd hand me a beer and shut the fuck up.
Baby, I don't think I did anything wrong, and I feel like I'm in trouble.
I'm your girlfriend. I'm not your mom. How can you get in trouble? I love that. In trouble. Explain to me again how you're in trouble. Explain that to me, I said.
You have to find out if your girl's a crier right away. That's the thing. It might be awkward, but months later, you'll be grateful. So, where do you work now?
The receptionist's office. It's easy. It gives me a lot of free time.
That's cool. That's cool. And you live only blocks away, you said.
Oh, yeah, it's right there. It's great. Do you cry?
I'm a woman. Of course I do.
Okay, gotta go.
You have to know how to act on a first date. If it's going bad, get out. A grounded woman could be walking past the bars. You're wasting time.
Keith, are you being honest with me? I just want to know if you're being honest with me.
Yeah, I'm retarded honest. Yeah, I'm probably the most honest guy you'll meet.
Yeah, I know you're being honest, but are you being honest? Boo!
And then I turn and walk away. But instead of doing that, most guys, and obviously the sexes can be reversed, figure they already bought the girl an $8 martini, so they might as well stay for another drink just in case. Wrong. That's just chasing good money after bad. Cut your losses and act like you're talking to her on the cell phone.
And that's why I love Showtime.
Yeah, I don't know. Showtime's cool sometimes. Because you're trying to work with her.
You said Showtime sometimes.
Yeah, I guess I did.
You're funny. Sometimes I think, hey, you like soft drinks?
Hello?
Yeah, what is it?
Can you hear me?
What?
Hello? Yeah, you're breaking up here.
I'm right here.
Okay, so I can't hear you. All right, take care. I'll call you soon. I miss you. Bye. And then I get up and I make a beeline out the door. I'm sorry, baby. I'm all out of minutes. I'll try to, like on a landline or something. Bye. It'd be cool if we could leave a bad date the way we leave a conversation with one of our buddies that gets too stupid.
And then my dad got cancer, but I always thought cancer was more something in your head, and the different forms of cancer, a different way people are different, you know?
Yeah, all right. And just leave. The point is, most guys are grossed out by gay men and the idea of man-on-man sex. But if it was explained to you that men have sex with other men because women cry all the time, I think we'd all get it and let them get married tomorrow.
Look, man, why are you gay? That's weird and gross. Girls cry.
Oh, okay, I finally understand. In fact, I think it'd be cool to be bisexual. Why are people intolerant of you guys? Now you know. You're not allowed both sides of the fence. It's not fair. When I wake up, I think about pussy. It usually takes up my whole day. But if you're bisexual, you're thinking about pussy and dick all the time. Whatever's in front of you is fine and you can't go wrong. Ooh, what should I watch on TV? ESPN or The View? And then you laugh this evil laugh. Ha ha ha! I win again. You're in your car. Should I listen to Bette Midler or Dice? I can do anything. I win again.
And I wouldn't even have a car. I'd be sitting on a box in my living room rocking back and forth like a crazy person. I'd be pretending to drive. I'm bisexual. I can do anything I fucking want to.
So now you know why I make gay jokes. Hopefully that's been put to rest. I'd like you to rest with me. Everything isn't a double entendre, okay? Ever play pool with a gay? They can't quit giggling. Oh, you have to try hard if you want to get the ball in the hole with your stick. Talk normal, and maybe we'll let you get married. Anyway, the only job I can't see doing is being an optometrist. I hate these fuckers. I wore glasses up to age 25 when I got that laser surgery on both eyes, so I've been poked and prodded by optometrists most of my life, and I hate them and their fucking tests. Now again, what's clearer, one or two? One, two, and then those fuckers try to trip you up. One or two? One. One or two? Two. One or two? Two. Now, this two is the same two from my first question. So you're either not paying attention, you're making things up, then one, whatever, go fuck yourself.
I realized why I kept getting the same bullshit jobs. Every time I tried for a good one, I asked my overly religious parents to pray to help me get it. When I asked them to pray for me, though, I never got the job, and then I realized why. When they prayed, they didn't pray that I'd get the job. They prayed that I'd get whatever's best for me. What the damn hell? Pray for this job, then when something better comes along, pray for that. Don't pray for whatever's best. I'll never get what I want. Pray for what's best. I'll be a monk teaching wayward teenagers the glory of God. I don't know what's best for me, but I got a feeling it ain't telling jokes. Like every time I tell a joke, all the angels in heaven sing, Hallelujah. I love the bit about sitting on a box being a bisexual. I'm praying for pussy. My parents are praying I get what's best. They're offsetting all my damn prayers. I'll pray for you. Thanks, but no thanks. Besides, God only answers simple prayers. please may I get a bike for Christmas? Help me find my car keys. You start asking for what's best, and he just ignores you. The Lord ain't got time to figure out what's best for everybody. But if you ask him for a 20, he'll be more than happy to lend a hand. God helps those who think for themselves. When you pray, be specific. I learned how ridiculous temping places are the very first day I was in one. Along with an application, they give you a spelling, math, and filing test on paper, and then they take you downstairs to run some laps. I was happy when I saw the written tests with the applications. Those are always easy. Does Williams H go under WA to WP or WR to WZ? Exactly how is filing a skill? Are you brain dead? Yes. No. Did you just check yes above thinking that you really checked no? Yes. No. Explain. The best time to look for a job is when you're already content where you are. That way, when you see the new job, A, you won't be nervous or desperate, and B, if you realize the job won't improve your life, you cannot give a fuck during the interview as a joke, just, you know, see what would happen. A temp agency interview is the perfect place for this. You give a good impression, ace the written test, go to another floor for computer testing, then get ignorant. Say you have 10 minutes to type in a document. 10 minutes later, when the teacher, you know, goes around to look at the screen, yours reads, "I like vagina." And then say you misunderstood the directions. When you're given instructions to input data onto a chart, put in letters, numbers, and symbols that make up a picture when you're done. Like maybe a vagina. Remember that you're in a room being tested with many mindless zombies. You need to stand out. Have Tourette's. You've always wanted to try it. Start cursing loudly. Just shout it out. You have a disease and you can't be discriminated for being ill or, for that matter, liking vagina. I was having so much trouble making a table, boxes forming columns and rows in Microsoft Word to their specifications, and I seriously considered shutting the computer off so the file would be lost and my time would start over. As soon as you sit down in front of the computer, just turn it off and then ask, it's okay to turn it on, right? You mean it's off? That's odd. Yeah, sure. Turn it on. 5 minutes later, turn it off again. Another thing that's funny to do is to pass notes. Pass notes secretly to only your gender of choice, asking the exact same questions. You going to the game tonight? Do you have a date for the prom? How come you're not wearing my ring? Between notes, throw in winks. I like to make sure a female applicant I winked at sees me winking at another. I like it when they get jealous, because you can't enter data properly when you're filled with jealousy. Another funny thing I noticed doing is instead of turning off your computer, unplug other people's computers as they're working. Then make the sign with your fingers across your neck like you're going to kill them. You're typing, the tester turns her back, you immediately slam your hand down on the keyboard of the person sitting next to you, and then you act like nothing happened. There isn't anything funnier. Except for Tourette's. Again, that's pretty damn funny. Okay, the first test is a simple typing test. It'll test your accuracy and attention to... Gah! If that's too bold for you, sing while you type. I don't want no scrubs. A scrub is a bum that don't get love from me. Something that's always funny, before the instructor enters the room, walk up to the blackboard and draw a big dick in chalk. Real big, just a big old dick right up there. When the teacher comes in and is totally appalled, get up from your chair and ask if you can erase that. Oh, yeah, that's disgusting. Please do. Thank you. My pleasure. Also, it's okay if I turn on my computer, right? If you know you blew your computer test, type, "Your computers are currently networking a virus to all your other computers," and then walk out. It'll make you feel better about being made to wait for 8 hours. The typing test said I typed 33 words a minute, which isn't bad for an index typist. Although I type fast, I only use the index and middle finger of my left hand to type. My right hand hits the return and delete keys. I took typing in high school, but like most classes in high school, I had to cheat to pass. I passed 3 years of Spanish, and I can't speak a lick of it. Well, I can say hola, stupido, and maricón, but that only leaves me with so many sentences. In health class, I redid the final test for insisting I wasn't present on exam day, and I passed. My friend failed and retook health for another year. Typing class was no different. When the teacher turned away from me to watch others type, my head was buried in the keyboard. When she looked my way, I just pretended to type. Then I'd make up for it when her back was facing me. It was the big exam, however, that determined your final grade, and the teacher would take the time to watch everybody for that. You looked at the keys once, you failed. If you made one mistake, there was your A. Two mistakes was a C, I think. Three mistakes, you got a ruler shoved up your ass. It wasn't pretty. Surprisingly enough, like a cat eating her kittens, not even fun to watch. Just before the test, I broke my wrist. Now, I'm not some sicko. I didn't break it deliberately. I think I broke it roughhousing with my brothers. I can't really remember. Anyway, I obviously couldn't take the test in a Michael Jackson wrist cast. Later, the wrist healed, and I took the test with a new typing group. While the teacher taught them, I blatantly stared at the keyboard for an A+. That's why I know where all the keys are, yet I can't type. However, after taking the temp test and scoring 33 words per minute, the lady in charge of the agency got me my first job by telling the client I typed 40 words per minute. Apparently, you can round up. For my first day of temp work, I had to get a tie. Explain to me how I have to bargain a tie down to $20. The tie originally cost $95. Oh, and how does a tie cost $100, by the way? It's a tie. And who's the prehistoric fashion designer that decided we'd all look more professional if we wore a piece of cloth around our neck? If you know, be sure to go to his grave and thank him for me. I bet a female designed the tie. She called it a tie because she didn't think it would catch on if it was called a leash. And what's with the stylish hanky in the suit pocket exposed for all to see? Who made that fashionable? You wipe your stink-ass sweat and your runny nose with it. Oh, thank you for showing that to us. To show I'm a force to be reckoned with, I wear my underwear inside out on my wrist. I'm fancy. I want to know what came first, the tie for men or makeup and heels for women. Whichever came second was retribution for the first. If we could all just call it a truce, we could all start living much more comfortably. Anyway, the freedom you feel when you check on a job you don't need is amazing. And usually we don't look for better jobs like we should. We only check on a job when we really need it. And then you act like you're really the one in control. Okay, you should know that you won't be paid during training. And once you do start the job, you'll have to stay an hour after your shift to help lick clean the toilets for no pay as well. Yeah, well, that makes sense. That makes sense. I'd expect that. That would make sense here. No matter how horrible the job is, it never registers until you go home and think about it.
Now that I think about it, we probably won't be paying you at all.
I see. Well, it sounds like what I've been looking for. Makes you just want to stay in bed, but then your girlfriend gets mad when she comes home to find out you've been sleeping all day. Yes, I'm jerking off, but I'm still thinking about how I need a job. My jerking off isn't as good as it can be. But no, girlfriends don't seem to understand that. Remember when I was held up at gunpoint, I challenged? Does that sound familiar? One gun on my head, one gun on my chest. You want that to happen again? Wow. Are you going to stay in there just drinking beer your whole life now? You can't understand till it happens to you. You have to at least look for work. Oh, so that I get shot again. You weren't shot at. Oh, I suppose that's what you would want. Now I'm a cripple. Well, tell me, pray tell, how I'm supposed to find work as a cripple. What kind of sick logic is that? I found myself many times desperate for work. I have no desire to be a policeman or a fireman. But you hear a commercial at the right time and you think about it. Maybe I should be a crab fisherman. Just last week, I was on the Lower East Side in New York City. Well, I'm kind of lying. You know, it's one of those. I wrote this a long time ago. Anyway, it was last week. I was on the Lower East Side in New York City, and I saw a cop car screech to a halt at a red light. I then watched two plainclothed cops with swinging badges exit the car. Then I saw the cops run full speed around the corner. I followed the cops to see the action, and within seconds, a young Hispanic chap was swarmed by undercover cops and blaring police cars. They all got the criminal, and I got to see him stopped and handcuffed. Then another cop car sirened over, and a few more undercovers showed up. Every time I thought the scene was over, another car came, and two more undercover cops came running, and I just smiled. Where do I apply again? Because I'm sure you get shot at, what, once every few years? But this easy shit, I bet it happens all the time. And to show I could handle it, I screeched my Hyundai to a stop, then I jumped out. As soon as I arrived at the scene, then I'd catch my breath. Oh, you already got him? Oh, good, you already got him, good, okay. And then I'd point to like a random person down the street. You guys didn't get her in the red? Okay, I'll take care of this thing, go! I wonder what the questions are the first month in the academy. I walk the street now, and every other person I see, I think, can he be arrested? Look at this crazy fuck. No one can arrest him? When you see crazy people on the street talking to an imaginary person, why are they always yelling? Why are the two people, who are just like us, except one is totally insane and the other one, you know, simply doesn't exist, always angry? You hardly ever see a crazy person turn to his imaginary friend and say, you know, that is so true. Oh, man, you are so funny. High five. I mean, come on, being happy all the time. That's the whole point of being crazy. And why are the two people, the crazy and his non-existent friend, always on opposite sides of the street? Why don't they walk together? Does one of them have a disease? And if so, which one? The crazy woman on my block walks around all day, every day, no matter what the weather, arguing with her imaginary friend, muttering to herself, bulging out her eyes while walking around in circles aimlessly. You know, crazy people stuff. But every so often, I'll see her talking normally to a real-life friend. How do you stop being crazy to interact normally? If I watched this woman for a while, the whole day, would I notice the transition? I raise my kids like I raise my cocktail, and I eat asparagus in the twilight daytime with Satan. Satan! Oh, Marge, hi. How are the kids? There's not many lazy, crazy people. I mean, sure, there are bums, but when you're talking really crazy, those folks aren't leaning back. They're running around all the time. They always have to be somewhere. Even if they walk past you 5 times in 3 minutes, they're heading somewhere. Now I gotta be over there. Now I gotta be over here. I took care of business over here. Now I gotta be over here. Looks like I got a business meeting over here now. Fuck you across the street. Fuck you. I bet my neighborhood crazy lady wakes up in the morning and goes, okay, first I'll eat breakfast, shower, put on something cool and loose, pay some bills over the internet, and then I'll go outside on the street and I'm going to act crazy all day. I think I'm going to act crazy. Today's a me day. I think being crazy, though, would just be like any other job that would grind on me. I bet crazy people are walking around counting the hours to the end of their shift. I swear to God, if I'm going to be crazy one more day. I was coming home from a nice date once, and it was a crazy bum that helped me out. We're on the subway, and a bum comes up to us. You two look good together. Stay with each other. And I'm like, oh, I have to admit, you know, he might stink, not have a job, and sleep on cement blocks for mattresses, but that is one wise man. We do look good together. He knows. He's a fortune teller. Look at that crazy eye. There's powers in there. And then the bum continues. You're a good couple. Can you spare some change? And then I wonder, like, if the wise bum ever has to deliver bad news to couples. I don't rob and I don't steal. He's making the rounds. You know, you two. Damn! What happened here? Ouch! Did someone lose a bet? Anyway, can y'all help a brother out just the same? You know what it's like being a crazy person? Being an actor. You think you're having a conversation with them until you realize they've been reciting a rehearsed monologue like a fucking crazy person. I'm gonna be one, but I hate them. And if I hear one more time how good their acting school is... Or maybe I think acting school is bullshit because I was trained to act at such a young age. Maybe I was too young to realize the skills I've learned. You see, my very own dad was my acting teacher. Acting class started first thing in the morning in the Malley household. You were put in your audition situation upon rising out of bed, where you would, upon first sighting of dad, say, "Good morning, Dad. How are you today?" You must be like a hawk with your eyes. You must be sure to spot dad before he spots you. If he spots you first, you are no longer the hunter. You have become the hunted. If dad finds you before you find him, it's lights out. What do we say when we first see someone? Immediately, you must cut dad off or risk hearing the familiar 2-hour lecture on how to properly greet other human beings in a civilized society. Good morning, dad, we'd plead. How are you today? Let's try this again. Then dad, apparently an actor as well, continues whatever he was doing earlier. And then we must say sincerely, good morning, dad. How are you today? And then dad, all upbeat, acts like he didn't see this coming. Oh, what a pleasant surprise. I'm doing quite well, thank you. And yourself? This is the same father that decided I needed to be a priest so I could be exorcised. It's not that I think acting classes aren't all that helpful. It's just, well... Okay, that's exactly what I think. I went to a few free acting classes, the ones that they pull out all the stops to interest you. They're all bullshit. This one class I went to started with 10-minute face exercises. Come on! Do I really need to stretch my tongue? I'm not doing marathon readings here. I really don't think I'm going to cramp up. We did some improv in this class, and I'd always change the story, so it ended up me and this one girl would be kissing. Oh, Keith, your acting is great, but what prompted your character to kiss her? Well, I mean, you know, she was cleaning the stove, so my character felt she was longing to be kissed. Later, we ended up doing a scene with no words. We had to convey an entire story with only expressions. Why? Are silent movies making a comeback? I need an acting teacher who's famous. I don't need a failure who's only known in those artsy theater circles. I want Oliver Stone to be my teacher. I'd pay that guy $25. Almost anyone can act, period. LL Cool J is just as good an actor as James Woods. It's actually a challenge not to act well. Think all the different kinds of people you've met in your life. Is the character you're seeing on TV not like anyone you've ever met? I also hate comedians. Even the very famous ones piss me off. People, when you go to Letterman and he's interviewing you, share something. Quit doing your act. Just talk. And then to add insult to injury, in case we haven't memorized your jokes yet, you go on Leno the very next day and say the very same thing. Now, maybe if each state only got one channel, we wouldn't notice. But come on. Even if you feel like you have to be sure you're going to be funny, at least give it a little extra effort. Actors and comedians don't even try to hide that the conversation is all set up. The host and the guest aren't having some kind of banter. The host asks one question, and then the guest rants for 5 minutes until he ends with, Well, I don't know. And then the host asks the next question. Earlier today, we talked about the president. How do you feel about the president? Oh, that's interesting. Very interesting. And how do you feel about flying cars? People that work in soft porn bookshops. Do you have any comments about these people? I hate everything on TV, and I let it all bother me. I watch the news just to get pissed off for the day. Automobiles and automobile companies make up 29% of the nation's economy, while butterscotch churning is a $17 gazillion business. I'm not astounded. It makes sense to me. Who doesn't know someone who likes butterscotch? I like when the news does the news in 60 seconds. They fit everything that's going on in the world under a minute. Isn't it amazing the way they never screw up? The world's events always take up exactly 60 seconds. You know they could get it done in even less time. This becomes quite obvious when a picture of like the Taj Mahal is on for a while with no voiceover. It also becomes obvious when they're at 50 seconds, they drag out the closing. And that's the world in 60 seconds. If I were in charge of the news, my show would be The World in 90 seconds. You'd learn 50% more about the planet, and you'd only spend 30 more seconds of your time. And what the hell is 30 seconds of your time? All of a sudden, your time is so important. And if the world can be covered in a minute, that should be the 6 o'clock news right there. At 6:01, I want another encore performance of Full House. We don't need a newspaper every day either. The paper should cost us as much news information as it contains. Some days charge us a full dollar. I'll pay it. But be honest, some days only charge us a nickel. We don't have news today, but inside, Britney Spears sneezing. I'll pay the nickel. Happily. Pictures of Reese Witherspoon eating food. Hey, Reese, hungry much? And is this how Charlize Theron dresses when she gets her mail? Hey, Charlize, ever hear of a little thing called class? If your lead story is that an eagle was recaptured at the local zoo, maybe you don't need to put out a newspaper that day. Don't get me wrong, it's a nice story. I know it's so much more beautiful to see a proud bald eagle bouncing around a cage than flying free in the wild. Just don't put it on the front page of a paper. We got you back, bird. What were you thinking?
I was trying to fly like an animal.
Oh, bird. The unoriginality of seeing a newspaper headline that uses the dollar sign in place of the letter S for articles that somehow relates to money constantly disturbs me. The Donald in it for the cash, and the S has the line through it because it's a dollar sign. It's clever. Prostitution on the rise. Get the double pun? Planet Hollywood crumbles. Is there finally a cure for AIDS? Politics as usual. That one never gets old, never. It's not clever. It's never been clever. Stop it. Banks don't even do that. Newspapers think they're so clever and that we're so stupid. And it's proven every time a news writer uses brackets in a story. Arnold Schwarzenegger's new movie has Arnold, and then in brackets, Schwarzenegger, deep in a jungle of terror, in brackets, meaning fear. They're basically calling you an idiot. Like when Leno explains a joke for 5 minutes. I worked with this dude that always checked out the previous day's lottery numbers in the paper and then swore that he knew the numbers and what they would be. Every job I ever had, there was always that one person that swears they have the system down. Numbers are repeated. Okay, listen. Numbers are repeated. And there's a pattern. I know the system. I could win millions anytime I wanted to. Then why don't you quit talking about it and do it and then stop having to wait tables like a little bitch? Yeah, you know what, Keith? You know what? Someday I should. Someday I should. In New York, one year around St. Patrick's Day, this woman in her 30s was kidnapped on the Upper East Side. She's stolen for an hour and she's already on the front page. No dude's ever on the front page right away. Picture that call to the police. Hi, my husband, he walked the dog and yeah, okay, you know what? We're sure he's fine, actually. He's probably just sleeping it off, even though, you know, I'm sure you provide a lovely, inviting home. Click. I'm reading the Post and I see a picture of Hiroki whatever, the Japanese Yankee baseball player, and he's wearing a mask over his face to what you believe is to protect him from the Chinese SARS fatal respiratory disease. And I'm like, get the fuck out. Hiroki wears a mask when he's swinging bat at a big game? And then you read the fine print. Here's what Hiroki might look like if he donned a protective respiratory mask. Why do you have him swinging a ninja sword while you're making shit up? I get mad when the news and TV shows give a teaser that's so close to a flat-out lie. Tony Danza leaves his family and is moving to New York. Am I a retard all of a sudden that I don't know that the news story I'm going to actually see means he's temporarily moving to New York for some song and dance show? He's not leaving his family, and I know it already, so fuck you. I hope that when it comes on TV, his family is like, what? And his son starts crying. TVs and movies just rule my life, and yet I hate everything about them. I hate when someone makes an obvious joke and then they're saying they're kidding. The other day I did something faster than normal and this person says, wow, that was fast. And I go, yeah, I'm quick. Now, the way it was said, it was like I was saying, I'm quick in bed too. But even though that was implied, the person felt it necessary to say, yeah, that's what your girlfriends told me. And then before I could fake laugh, the guy goes, I'm just kidding. Really? They didn't individually call you up and tell you I don't last long in bed. That was actually just a joke you said. I bring this up because I compare it to TV interviews, like when Jay Leno would make a joke about a celebrity in his monologue, and then before you can laugh, he'll go, just kidding, just kidding. He's actually a good friend of ours. Of course I'm just bitter because I've worked all these shit jobs and I keep seeing all these people making millions of dollars doing nothing. I'm wiping a grown adult's asshole when somebody's pretending Godzilla is attacking New York City. You see that piece of shit? Godzilla the movie? I think where they went wrong is when they acted like it was the first Godzilla movie ever made. I would have made it a sequel. Godzilla destroyed many countries, but Japan always defeated the monster with laser tanks. Realizing the United States is the only country not yet defeated, obviously excluding Japan, Godzilla attacks it. For help, the U.S. contacts the Japanese government. Realizing this is now Japan's opportunity to retake the world, they take advantage of the situation. And there's the President of the United States. Hi, sorry to wake you, your great one, but Godzilla, you know, the giant lizard beast. And there's the Japanese important man. Ho ho ho, we know. We know from Godzilla. Yes, well, he's at our shores now and we can't find anything to destroy him. What did you guys use to get rid of this unstoppable animal?
Oh, simple. Use laser tanks.
Use what?
Just use... Oh, hold on.
And the second in command reminds the Japanese leader that this is the moment they were waiting for all their lives.
Oh, so sorry, he continues. Yes, to kill Godzilla, use fish.
Fish?
Oh, yes, many fish. Godzilla hates fish.
Really? Isn't he like a sea monster, though?
Oh, trust us. Use fish. Put fish all around Wall Street.
All right, it just seems... Okay, you must know. Here's what we were thinking about, though. Actually, we were thinking about using laser tanks.
Oh, no, no. No use laser tanks. Fish. Godzilla love laser tanks. Godzilla hates fish. KeithandTheGirl.com.